Welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Good morning. If you're just after switching on, I think you missed quite an interesting conversation on the vacant property grant. We had Vincent Cranley in from the council. It's proving hugely popular in Donegal. This county has the highest rate of applications to it. And loads of questions. The caller says, I think that person that asked about using two grants on one property may have meant, can you use SEIA grants as well as the vacant property grant? Well, I can answer that because it did come up in the conversation. Yes, indeed, you can. You can go for that grant as well. Right, okay, so other stuff that's come in here. Caller says she was given the injection for type 2 diabetes and her daughter took one of them as she wanted to lose weight. She was vomiting so much she had to go to the hospital. The doctor advised her that unless you have diabetes, you should not take this injection as it could shut down all your organs. Now, I would never contradict a doctor in that regard, but there are quite a lot of people in this country, because it's been covered extensively in the press, that were prescribed this that don't have diabetes. But you have to be prescribed it, and it's your doctor. Now, I don't think they're prescribing it for anything other than diabetes now. The government is discriminating against the Irish people by giving everything to the Ukrainian people and leaving the Irish to fend for themselves. They're getting their cars fixed for free and everything. Indeed, I didn't realise that until quite recently, that there's designated garages if the car breaks down. Hi, Greg. I think the Ukrainians could go back to their country at this stage. Always in a queue for free money at the post office, no matter what day you go in. Enough is enough. Well, they can collect the money whenever they like. I take your point. I think this is going to be a very interesting year for the war that is in Ukraine. Where's Greg getting the idea that many Ukrainians have gone home? But it's a good question, as most of Ukrainian is not in a war zone. It's not an opinion. I'll get the statistics for you. I can't, off the top of my head, I think it was 100,000 that came in, and there's much less than that remain. Not much less than that. A proportion of those remain. I'll get the exact stats for you, but I think 30,000 or 40,000 have either gone home or gone to another country. Many people seemingly went from here to America or Germany or wherever it might be. So it's not an idea, it's a statistical fact. I would only ever sort of say that, but I should have had the receipts. I'll get the details for you on that. That's not to say, by the way, there's a mass exodus. I'm just saying a significant proportion have left. The Irish people need to consider and decide what level of migration is desirable. I believe that we're at a rate which in just a couple of decades will leave the Irish as a minority in their homeland. Now, that would mean many, many, many millions of people, quite a few millions of people coming in. The only reason businesses want cash is to avoid paying tax. The buyer had to pay tax on higher wages, so why should the retailer not have to pay their share? Hi, Greg. Letterkenny's a complete disaster. That new road was a waste of money. You could land planes on the footpath each side. They can't design nothing right in this country, Greg. And that reminds me of the gentleman, lovely gentleman, that came on just as those works were coming to an end. And he came on to talk about his wedding day. And it was back in the 70s. And he was late for his wedding because he got stuck on the four lanes. And I just thought, you know, some things never, ever change. Right. OK, Amy Donoghue's a journalist with the Irish Independent. Amy, good morning to you.
Morning, how are you, Greg?
I'm okay, Amy, but one simple question. Why can't we just have nice things?
Exactly, yeah. I work near the portal as well, so yeah, it's a funny one.
Right, talk to us then about this. I mean, right from the get-go, this was always going to happen. I have the receipts, I have it on tape. I said, this is not going to last long, but maybe that's just the cynic in me. So talk to us about what was established and who's behind it, and I presume it's the backing of Dublin Council.
Yeah, so DCC launched the portal last Wednesday. So, yeah, it's a week exactly since we connected with New York. So, yeah, there's been a lot of nice things, but yeah, the bad outweighs the good. So, yeah, we have been going viral on many social media acts for acting the maggot. So.
And also, yeah, too, like, I mean, this is really effectively, basically, it's designed as a portal, but this is a constantly open Zoom call, effectively, from Dublin, yeah, to New York, right? And then there's this time difference, right? So when people in New York are just maybe heading out for a spot of lunch or have just concluded it, a lot of people in and around Dublin maybe just on the way home from a night out or something.
Yeah.
And that's where maybe the two things don't jive. Was there anything ever put in place to censor poor behavior. You've seen the videos, I'm sure, what appears to be someone at least pretending to take drugs. You know, that particular, I thought that image of the Twin Towers up to the camera, particularly horrible swastikas, the boobs coming from New York. Was there anything ever designed to sort of protect either end from such activity?
So I was up there yesterday evening. I was waiting on a friend 10 minutes, and within that 10 minutes, the portal was shut down 3 times. And I assume it was our fault, because I don't know what... Someone kept on putting their phone up. I don't know what was on the phone, but yeah, 3 times it was shut down in a matter of minutes. So it is being monitored now. I'm just not sure how exactly to do it. But yeah, when something offensive or something bad happens, it goes off now.
All right, okay. But it is currently off at the moment. So I presume, if I'm correct, sorry, Amy, I presume the authorities aren't really happy with the safety net that's in there at the moment, and they're looking to sort of tweak that.
Yeah, I suppose they are. And yeah, hopefully we can come up with a solution as well, because it is something that...
Put it in Donegal. We'd never do any of that stuff, Amy.
yeah, it'd be really nice for families and kids to go and see it, maybe just see another continent. But yeah, it's ruined by other people.
Is it clear how long... Is this a permanent installation or something that's temporary? That's one thing I haven't really seen in anything I've read.
So what the story is that we're going to be looking at Fifth Avenue in New York until July. Then we are going to be looking at Brazil, Lithuania and Poland. So yeah, New York will not be the only place seeing us. So.
But from the Dublin end of the portal, it's staying in situ. It's not moving to Cork or Limerick or anywhere else, as far as we're aware.
As far as we're aware, but yes, I would not be surprised if there was a little bit of a switch.
It's a lovely idea, maybe, you know, going back 10 or 20 years, but people are motivated for many different reasons. Now, not least notoriety, and we saw the model in New York, obviously, you know. My understanding is she is a model that would, you know, you'd see quite a bit of her.
Yes.
So it's not a huge leap for her to do it in public, right? And that's she's entitled to make money whichever way she wants. But from that, then she gets publicity, and then that drives traffic to her Instagram and OnlyFans, etc. Right?
Yes.
So in this day and age, whether it's offensive or not, this is always going to be exploited for trending reasons, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And yeah, hopefully people decide, we'll do something nice instead of something, just what we've seen over the weekend with the Twin Towers and all of that. Yeah, hopefully someone can come up with a more creative idea and do something nice and go viral for that reason,
exactly,
rather than something awful that could trigger people.
And finally, you know, at the end of the day, there has to be a technical solution to this, because we've already seen Garda, you have to intervene in some cases, and they're busy enough, and particularly in Dublin, they certainly don't want the role of policing a video camera.
I suppose that, there just needs to be some sort of solution. Maybe if they kind of blurred out screens or something like that, or kind of did... prolonged it a bit, like delayed the webcam by a few minutes so something can be covered up, maybe. But yeah, we shouldn't have to do any of this at all. People should just behave and appreciate that we have something unique.
Oh, are those rose-tinted sunglasses you have on your head? It's a lovely thought. Listen, thanks so much, Amy. Take care of yourself.
No bother.
Right,
thanks
bye
a lot,
bye.
Greg.
All right,
bye
lovely
bye.
To chat to you. Bye. That's Amy Donoghue, journalist with the Irish Independent. I sort of said in passing, in relation to a church attendance yesterday. A caller says, "Greg, reattendance at church is decreasing. If you were told from childhood that a particular restaurant was the best in town, serving the very best nutritious variety of foods to feed your body and brain, then one day you'd get bored of going there because the restaurant was serving the same menu every week with foods that was lacking the nutrients that you thought you were getting to feed your brain. And the chef just went through the same repetitive ritual in the kitchen every week, year after year. Would you keep going back to that highly recommended restaurant? I think not. Food for your body and brain needs to be edifying, to be interesting. Work out the parable yourself, Mary." I might have to do that in my own time. I think that, is it the, are we saying that church needs to mix up the menu or that the food's not good there? Anyway, could the public be a little more considerate of the canvassers? Of course, we're in election mode. And by the way, starting next Monday, we have an awful lot of candidates running in the local and European elections. And you're going to hear from every single one of them that accepts the invite to come on the 9 till noon show and subsequent programming. I'll explain a little bit more to you, by the way. And for some, it's going to be like, oh, elections. And for others, it's going to be really very interesting, but also a vital element of the democratic process. So from Monday, we will be holding a series of daily debates here on the 9 till noon show, starting at, Caroline, is it 10? Just after 10, it is anyway, 10 till 12. So we'll have a panel of five or six candidates in studio. We have randomised it as much as is possible. Obviously, then, if there's two of the same party and what have you, you have to make some slight adjustments in relation to that. But we will have panels of candidates from all the electoral areas in this area. So you'll get to hear from them. And we'll be inviting you to pose questions as well. And also then after that, for a week, we will be doing a European candidate special as well. Now, that's not on air. It is online and on social media. You'll be able to watch all of this as well. But as I say, as this approaches, we'll tell you more about it. But you will hear from every single candidate that accepts the invite and we'll get them to debate, discuss the issues and try and keep it, I think, you know, it's not my role to do it, but if I were a candidate, what I would do, you know, like you really want to sell. I would like to be sold by a person what they could do in the council, right? So people might have really interesting views on international matters, all right? But really, can you affect that in Lifford? And the same goes for Europe. You know, if you're for a European candidate, what can you do in Europe for Ireland? You know, not what do you observe in Ireland, but you just go over to Europe, do your thing. For 4 or 5 years and you can't make any difference on that. So I think personally that candidates should really focus on their areas of actual influence. But as I say, that I'm not to dictate that. That's up to them, whatever they want to do. Gerry Anderson is the joint owner of Killybeg Seafood Shack and Anderson's Boathouse Restaurant in Killybegs. He's with us now. Good morning to you, Gary. I think I called you Gerry. I beg your pardon. Gary Anderson. Good morning, Gary.
Yeah. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Right. Now, talk to us about your trading situation up until now, where you've been operating and what have you.
Yeah, we've been located at the old pier in Killybeg since 2017, I think it is, every year. And it's been perfect. It's been a great attraction for the town centre. It's very visible. It kind of has product and placement. It makes people see the boats that are catching the fish and then, you know, sit on the wall and enjoy their fish and chips. That was up until recently. We just this year got our letter in from the council looking for their €1,000 for their trader's license. We paid that, and within like 2 days later we get a phone call to say that they're moving the shack off our spot and putting a bus stop in instead.
Mm-hmm.
And we were given approximately 12 days notice that they want the shack moved.
Right, and move to where? Is that...
There is no location being offered. There is a trader's car park in Killybegs, but that's unserviced with water or toilets. You know, there's legislation that is also in place by the health board that you've got to be within X amount of metres of a toilet. We have our restaurant on Main Street, so we have staff toilets there for our crew to be, you know, able to go up and use. And we've got our wash-up facilities, dishwashing, all of that. I mean, the restaurant was built to facilitate the shack,
mm-hmm.
ultimately, you know. Fortunately, it's done well as well. But, you know, the seafood shack is the heart of our business.
Yeah. What? It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because if this was just moving you because you were a nuisance or something or other... They've told you they're moving you to place a bus stop there. It is kind of very, very central. It's on a straight stretch of road. Would you sort of concede that maybe it is the best place for the bus stop in Killybegs?
No, I wouldn't. No, I mean, you could go further along. There's Department of the Marine Land there all along the pier that's shuttered off at the moment, holding stuff for construction that's going on in the town centre for the last 2 years. you know, it would make an ideal bus stop. It doesn't need to impact a business like ours. I mean, we're employing 11 people at the moment from the Seafood Shack, both full-time and part-time. We buy our fish locally. We get by Malloy's. You know, that's a huge loss to them if the business winds up. You've got McGinty's there in Donegal Town that supply us, Cisco, which would be a more national company supplying product then. You know, the impacts are huge to the local economy. I mean, we work very well with other businesses. You've got Sweet News, you've got Centra, the Harbour Bar. They all get a spin-off. Our customers go into the harbour for a pint when they're having their fish and chips. They buy teas and coffees, ice creams in the shops. You know, everybody gets a spin-off from it. It's a tourist attraction.
I mean, given its popularity, and it really is very popular and attracts huge crowds in the summer and what have you, the sort of natural place for people to stand and order is on the footpath. I'm not saying that's right or wrong, because you've talked about the dividend and the benefits to the wider sort of business community. Has that been flagged, as well as the bus station issue? Has people not being able to...
During COVID would have been an issue with people... I mean, everywhere had an issue during COVID with a huge crowd standing around. But now, no, God, you know, you're talking about a very controlled amount of people. You're not talking about doing 500-600 people a day anymore, you know.
I get you.
You're talking about maybe 10 or 15 people standing at any given time, but it's a very long, short road. Once they've ordered, they move along the wall, and they sit, they take in the view, or they go for a walk, you know, depending on the wait times. Mm-hmm. There's no congestion issue there.
Yeah. So what's the... I mean, Gary... Do you want to stay in situ, or do you concede that that's not going to happen and you want to be assisted in locating to another good location? I mean, what do you see as the... Because how long do you have left to move?
About 10 days now.
Right, okay. So you ideally, you want them to say, right, we see the benefits of this. This is an established business. It's good for the area. It's good for tourism. We'll leave that there and we'll move the bus stop. That's what ideally what you want.
Yeah, or delay your bus stop, trade us there all year until we get through our season, and build something that's actually suitable, not just for us, but for other traders. Put amenities in on the diamond there. You know, bring a bit of life into the town centre. Mm. Don't push everything out to the borders. You know, it's the most vibrant thing in Killybegs. You drive in, you see people standing there enjoying their fish and chips. They're... You know, a queue creates a queue. You go, oh, I wonder what's at the end of that. I'm going to go and check that out on the way back from Sleeve League or whatever it is. Visibility is so important to that business. If that goes into a corner somewhere, or, you know, up on the main street, we have a property there. It's not ready now, but, you know, when we get it finally done, you could move up there in the future. But it'll never be the same business, and it won't have the spin-off effect to the community that it has right now. You know, it's all about visibility. It's the one thing that makes Killybegs look like a tourist town.
Yeah, okay. And just in case in case you are forced off the site there, where would your new location be, or would you just abandon it altogether?
I don't have one right now.
Okay. So you're appealing to the powers that be to at least defer this to after the season is over?
Well, preferably leave it there. That's the only trading spot on that side of the town. There's one designated trading area and we paid a license on it. That's where I want to be. That's where we've always been. That's what makes sense for the visual aspect of a seafood business. It ties in the harbour with the fish, with the, you know, it makes you feel like you want to stop. On a nice sunny day like today, once you see 5 or 6 people standing there at 12:30 and we get open, it'll attract its own crowd. It always does.
Right. You know? Okay,
and
Gary.
That just doesn't work when we move.
All right. Well, listen, I hope a resolution is found one way or other. We appreciate your time this morning. And as you say, you've a lot of prep to do as you open at 12:30. Thanks for joining us this morning.
OK, thank you for
all right,
the call.
It's our pleasure. Gary Anderson there, who is the joint owner of the Killybegs Seafood Shack and Anderson's Boathouse Restaurant, Killybegs. You might, and those of you watching, will see an image of the seafood shack there. You'll recognise where it is. I've done it myself. I think I just got chips, though, if the truth be told, and sat on that wall and look at the boats. And it is beautiful, but it's been identified as the ideal location for a bus stop. And I can see that, too. But you get off the bus and then what? What do you think, if you're familiar with that area, particularly 08660 25,000, 08660 25,000? Posters are good, says a caller. These are election posters. They may help to find the name on a ballot paper. All seems to be taken down when the election is over. Could the public be a little more considerate of the canvassers? These are people giving up their time for the greater good of society. This is a once-in-a-five-year thing. Anyone who puts themselves before the public deserves time, believes that listener. Hello, Greg. Could you please mention my brother, Liam McColgan of Glasgow? He always listens into your programme and enjoys it. This comes from his sister, Grace, in Keady, Iskaheen Muff. Thanks, Greg. Hiya, Liam. Good to have you on board. Listening to us in Glasgow. We actually have quite a strong contingent of Scottish listeners. Some actually not with a connection to the Northwest at all. And it's great to have all of you on board. Let us know where you're watching or listening to us from. If you want a WhatsApp from just to see where we're reaching, wouldn't that be cool to see where we're reaching today? If you're watching us on the social media, comment on YouTube or Facebook or X and tell us where you're watching the show from. I love Gwydor, but I'm thinking maybe somewhere a little bit more further away where you're watching from. Actually, I want to hear from anyone. Or if you're listening to us, WhatsApp 00353 86 60 25,000. Tell us where you're listening to us from. It'd be really interesting if someone was halfway up Kilimanjaro or something. You don't have to be, but wouldn't that be cool? Right, we're going to be talking more about the reselling of weight loss jabs with Tom Murray, who's the president of the Irish Pharmacies Union. Any questions in relation to them, by the way? Tom's your man, he'll answer them. Now, obviously, in terms of who they're good for and all that kind of stuff, might be a GP question, but let's see. We'll ask Tom. Right, Danny is in Fatima in Portugal. Danny, good to have you on board. Sounds lovely. What's the weather like? Malinhead community are listening to us. Guess where they're listening to us from? Sunny Malinhead. It's always sunny in Malinhead. Tom Murray is president of the Irish Pharmacy Union. Tom, last time I spoke to you, I didn't congratulate you on your election as president. Congratulations. It's no mean feat.
Thanks, Greg. No problem.
All right, good stuff. Right. We were reading in the papers today, and do you know what? As soon as something becomes a commodity or has value, of course, there's going to be reselling of it. So before we get to it, talk to us about the main jabs that are being prescribed and collected from pharmacies.
For weight loss.
For weight loss, sorry, yes.
Yeah. Obviously, Ozempic and Saxenda are the two main products. Ozempic isn't actually licensed for weight loss in Ireland. It's only licensed for diabetes control. Saxenda is licensed for weight loss, and there's a product called Rigovi, which is licensed but isn't currently being supplied to the Irish market because the drug company is not happy with the reimbursement price from the HSE. So at the moment in Ireland, the two biggest products being used are Ozempic and Saxenda. Ozempic is primarily being used for diabetes control for blood glucose levels in type 2 diabetics, and that's what it's licensed for. It also has been used for weight loss, as is Saxenda. Both of them are in intermittent supply issues. Ozempic has been in the press a lot lately because of the shortages. That's been driven by all the factors that you and I have discussed several times about different medicines being short. There's up to 400 of them. Ozempic is a critical one. It's the one people are talking about most, and it's the one that's the most difficult to get supply off, but we are doing our best to maintain supply as much as possible to patients. We all have allocations in our pharmacies based on our dispensing pattern, and we all do get our supplies, sometimes with a small delay, but generally we do get our supplies and we're able to supply all our patients.
Now, according to press reports, there was a period of time whereby some GPs were prescribing some of these drugs purely for weight loss. The person didn't have diabetes, or maybe there was the threat of diabetes. Then we heard that there was a note sent, I presumably from the HSE and presumably to save supplies, that this product could only be supplied to people with diabetes. Am I reading correctly? Is that the way this story is unfolded?
So because Ozempic is only licensed for diabetes and because it's in short supply, the medicine supply chain network has to maintain those patients as much as possible. Having said that, we would never want to differentiate between one patient who has diabetes and another patient who may be suffering from obesity and has a BMI of over 29. Both patients need to be supplied as much as possible. Only one is a licensed use. So the state did make an advisory note that where the state procures supplies, it should be used for the licensed usage. There are GPs who are treating patients with obesity as part of a multidisciplinary team, and where it's appropriate for them to prescribe, they do. but it's not covered by the state. It's then a private transaction. We do try to manage supplies to both, and we do our best not to differentiate between patients with different conditions. And sometimes it's the same patient with both conditions.
Not your pharmacy specifically, but from the membership across the union, are those who have perhaps been prescribed in the past no longer being prescribed it? Maybe it's been useful for them. Maybe they're panicking a little bit that they no longer have access to it and are coming to pharmacists. Is a bit of that happening at the moment?
There's certainly a huge increased demand. There are patients who are regularly using it. I'm not aware of any patient who's obtained it who isn't currently using it. I have never seen that. But according to the papers today, there is evidence of that. And there are people who are selling it or trading it on online sites or on clandestine websites. And I would strongly advise against that. Ozempic isn't a simple drug. It may be very, very popular to say that it's a good, significantly effective weight loss drug. But if it's inappropriately used by a patient it's not prescribed for, the risks of hyperglycemia in the short term, pancreatitis, which is inflammation of the pancreas in the long term, which is extremely serious, and other side effects, I would caution against anybody using any medicine that wasn't appropriately prescribed by their GP. And I'd refer anybody who wants to use it to their GP for a prescription first and foremost. I'm not aware of people selling it, but according to the press, it certainly is happening. The other thing that would worry me is there are people buying it on clandestine websites. There are people buying it, apparently. There's an RT Investigates program coming up, which shows that the people are buying it in beauticians and in gyms. And you have no guarantee what's in the product, because if we can't get it through the regular medicine supply network, I question the ability of any people who aren't registered suppliers to get the medicines. There was an instance in Britain last year where they found counterfeit Ozempic and it actually contained pure insulin, which if it had been administered, it would have been fatal. So I understand people's concerns. I understand that those people using it for weight loss sometimes feel an urgency for supply. I would counsel them to talk to the pharmacists and the doctors about how to manage delay in supply, but do not buy counterfeit or medicine supplied outside of the medicine supply network.
Yeah, and I mean, injecting anything into you that you don't know its actual source is so scary. As you mentioned, pure insulin, the impact that might have on people, and would we ever really find out? It could be happening, not necessarily in Ireland. We'd probably have to go international to draw in quite a number of figures, but it is really, really quite concerning. That being said, statistics come out all the time talking about increased obesity. Needing to be treated as a disease. It would seem on the face of it that we do have quite an effective treatment for it. Do you envisage a point whereby, you know, we need to maybe start looking at some of these methods to try and bring down rates of obesity where it's applicable? Because it must be working, or we wouldn't be talking about it so much.
I absolutely think Ireland is getting on board. We're a little bit slower than other international countries to realise that obesity is a serious disease condition. It requires a multifactorial treatment, so it requires the GP, the patient, and other members of the medical team. There is a decision to be made between the drug company Wegovy and the state about supply of that medicine, which is licensed for obesity. I don't envisage that Ozempic's licence will change because Wegovy will replace it. Saxenda is on the market. We do need to look at treating obesity, and there is obviously the call ongoing for the government to put in strategies to manage the medicine supply chain and to get the manufacturers to cooperate more appropriately with the HPRA and with the government about how we manage medicines that are forecasted to go short and how we get greater supply for the Irish market.
Yeah, because there's a news cycle, right, where you'll get calls intermittently saying, what's the crack with supply? And the story remains, doesn't it? It's you and your members are constantly fighting this battle, trying to spread out, you know, in working with each other as well to try and get these medicines to people that needs them. I'm talking general medicines now, Tom. It's an ongoing battle, and we only hear about it, as I say, you know, someone in the newspaper says, crying out loud, the front page is a bit quiet today, I'll give Tom a ring. You know, but the problem's ever present.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I talked to you maybe a year or two ago and we were talking about 200 commonly used medicines were short, and we were quite shocked by that. The figure's close to 400 now. So there is a serious medicine shortage problem. It's not a uniquely Irish problem, as we've discussed. It's a worldwide problem. We do have a specific problem in Ireland in our market size and and the logistics of getting to us. We do, as I've talked to you about before, if there was a chief pharmaceutical officer at the same level as a CMO in the Department of Health, it would be their role to strategize for medicine supply and medicine shortages and to bring all the state agencies together that look for that. At the minute, they tend to work a little bit independently. That's why we have always called for a CPO to look at. There's certainly been an advancement in medicine shortages supply. There is work going on at a European level. There's work going on at Irish government level, and there is work when the drug companies are doing their what they can. Pharmacists are spending 9 to 10 hours a week on medicine shortages, trying to make sure patients don't get a shortage or don't have a delay in supply or that an alternative is found. It is an increasing role that deflects from our role of caring for patients, and it's something that has to be dealt with in the long term. Yeah.
All right, Tom, listen, thanks very much indeed. I really do appreciate your time, as always. Take care of yourself, and again, congratulations on being president of the Irish Pharmacy Union. 086 60 25,000 if you have an angle on that. Right, okay, let us see. We're going to play this voice note here from a listener as well. By the way, we invite your voice notes, 086 60 25,000.
Ali Farn here from Malinhead. In relation to the shack, I actually leave Malinhead on the odd Sunday and go to the shack. It's Kellybeg's greatest asset. I find it is internationally known. Everybody talks about it. That is a business that needs to be supported. It's a way of helping to promote the whole of Donegal. And it's ludicrous that they're being even moved. These businesses like this should be given assistance to help promote the county. That's my tuppence halfpenny worth on it.
All right, thanks very much for your tuppence. That is one view there. WhatsApp your voice messages to 086 60 25,000. Let me see. Where are people watching us and listening to us from? Paul O'Neill. Hi, Paul. He's listening to us from Thorndale, Ontario, Canada. Nice to have you on board. Charlie listens every morning from Edinburgh. Best programme, 9 till noon. Covers everything from A to Z. Keeps us up to date of what's happening back home. Cheers to everyone at Highland. Charlie, thanks for having you on board. Danny O'Donnell, as I said, was listening to us from or watching us in Fatima, Portugal. And I said just in passing, I wonder what the weather's like. It's not great, but warm, says Danny. Thank you very much indeed. Hi, Greg. I was listening to you from a dentist chair an hour ago, if that's any good to you, Stevie. Stevie, that's random. That is random. How did that go for you? I hope you're all right. Walking along Knockella Coast Road, listening to us. Fantastic. Lovely to have you on board. Hi, Greg. It's the Hegartys in Melbourne. Love listening into home. Lovely to have you on board as well. Joe's listening from Mallorca Costa Almeria in Spain. Lovely stuff. Hi, Greg. Listening to you here from lovely Killarney in Kerry. Hi, Greg. Richard here listening in Clydebank. Hiya, Richard. Great to have you on board. I'm in Rome to visit Papa. Just tuned in from the hotel before we set out for the day. Fantastic. Tell us more about that trip. Sounds lovely. A wee hello from David Crawford in Buncrana, listening in from Stansted, Mount Fitchett, Essex. Not quite Kilimanjaro, but great to listen in and hear all the news from home. Thank you to the entire Highland Radio team. Brilliant. Wherever you're listening from, WhatsApp us 0035386 60 25,000. If it suits you, send a voice note. Or if you're watching on our socials, drop us a note. Dolores Dunleavy's listening to us from beautiful, sunny, sandy, gorgeous Annagry. Love Annagry. All right, great to have you on board as always, Doris. Right, okay. Kyle Skefferton is a pupil at Scoil Easygon Primary School, Buncrana, and he's with us now, along with Claire McDade, who is his teacher. Kyle, I'll say good morning to you first. How are you keeping?
Good.
Okay, it's been a very exciting couple of days for you, hasn't it, Kyle? Because you wrote to a name that everybody knows, a person that everybody knows. He is literally a living legend. It's David Attenborough, who is obviously a wildlife filmmaker. He's synonymous, I think. He is the voice of wildlife and what have you. So why did you decide to write to Mr. Attenborough?
He like loves animals, and I like animals as well, and he like protects the environment, and like when I grow up I want to protect the environment, and just just that I just love animals and he loves animals. And
you watch a lot of his programs, Kyle, don't you, as well?
Yeah. When I was younger, I watched one with parrots and then another one, not too long ago, about lions and elephants. I think Africa.
Now, despite being a fantastic age of 98, David Attenborough is still really, really busy and still producing stuff. So when you sent him a letter, did you really ever imagine that he might actually write you back?
Not really.
So what did you get back from him, Kyle?
I got a letter back and I got a picture. A signed picture.
Wow. And what was it like when you saw the letter? How did it make you feel?
I was shocked for a second. I thought it wasn't real, and then I realised it was real because I got a signed photograph of him.
Oh, fantastic. Now, Claire is your teacher, Carl. Stay with me. Claire, I understand you were equally as excited as Kyle when this letter in quite short shrift turned around quite quickly.
Hi Greg, thanks for having us on. Yes, I was, I've been a fan of Sir David Attenborough all my life, really love animals, and he is just such a legend. So we got a phone call. We were actually doing sports down by the shorefront, and I got a phone call from the secretary to say there's a letter here for Kyle Skeffington, and I said what? And I grabbed Kyle and we literally ran the whole way back. My heart was thumping. We were just so excited, and as you said, it was a really quick turnaround. So we posted the letter on the 15th of April, and his is dated the 19th. So wow. He wrote back straight away.
And when we say he wrote back.
Yeah, he wrote back, and he addressed the envelope as well. It's amazing, especially for a man of 98 and a man who must be so busy and who must still receive letters. For him to handwrite the letter and to address the envelope, I mean, it's really incredible. It just shows how much he loves children. And, I know that he's been interviewed and said, the children of the future, obviously. So, he loves children.
Yeah, and he
values the letter.
He just doesn't talk the talk, does he? He walks the walk, because he's sort of saying, well, can I inspire Kyle, to be the next, I don't know, not necessarily even the next me, but the next sort of person heavily invested in protecting our world?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right, okay. Kyle, what did you... I mean, obviously, a lot of your friends are at school. They probably couldn't believe it that you're getting this letter pack from this famous person.
I know. I was on the newspaper, and then my teacher, Miss Celery, gave me the newspaper, and everybody was surrounding me.
Oh, well done to you. And Camille, what would you like to sort of travel the world? And you talked about lions and all that kind of stuff. Would you like to travel the world and see the nature for yourself? Do you enjoy the nature at home? Talk to me a little bit more about your love of that stuff.
Yeah, I have a tent, and I'm going to put up the tent in, and then I'm going to be staying there for a night, and it's going to be really fun because it's outdoors.
Oh wow.
And I do want to travel the world. I want to go see more animals. I want to see more types of foxes around the world.
And he wants to be a wildlife photographer, which is why he decided to write to David Attenborough.
For sure.
As well as loving animals, he wants to be a wildlife photographer. And actually, in his letter to David Attenborough, Kyle had mentioned that he had been to Wild Island. Foxes are his favourite animal. And so we contacted Killian at Wild Island, and Killian was wonderful. He brought Kyle down, brought him into the area with the Arctic foxes, and they came up really close, and we got a VIP treatment around Wild Island.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful.
It is. And speaking of foxes, there's a fox around our place, and it is literally the size of a dog. It is absolutely massive and not shy at all. It walks around like it owns the place. And Kyle, the exciting thing with your sleep out is that, you see a completely different type of nature and different sounds at nighttime as well, don't you?
Yeah, like bats and all that.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, Kyle, I hope this inspires you to achieve everything that you want to. I'm sure you will, especially with the support of Claire and all the fantastic teachers at Skull Iskun Primary School in Bunkrana. A wonderful story. Kyle, keep the interest. Follow your dreams. I hope you achieve everything you want to, and why wouldn't you? And Claire, Finn McCree and Mavail, when you found out the letter was there, I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited for you as well. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for your time,
all right,
Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Kyle Skeffington, a pupil there at Skull Iskun in Bunkrana, and teacher Claire McDade. A wonderful story. This letter, handwritten by Sir David Attenborough, with encouraging Kyle, and also with a signed photograph as well. Great excitement.